need-capacity gap. The need-capacity gap is the difference between expenditure need and revenue-raising capacity. For ease of interpretation, this gap is standardized to be zero in the average school district. This standardization technique allows us to readily see how each district's fiscal capacity compares to the average. See Appendix 11A. A positive gap means that a district cannot provide an average quality education to its students at the average tax burden. It either must lower its service quality, below the average, or raise its tax burden, above the average, or both. Conversely, a negative gap indicates that the school district can generate revenue in excess of the amount it needs to provide an average quality education by imposing an average tax burden upon its residents. A need capacity gap of $50, for example, indicates that a county would have to receive $50 per student from outside sources to be able to provide the same service quality at the same tax burden as the average school district. In contrast, a need capacity gap of negative $50 implies that a school district could provide the average service quality at the average tax burden and still have $50 per student left over to finance higher service quality or to lower the tax burden on its residents. Need capacity gaps, expressed in dollars per student, are presented in Table 11.11. These gaps range from negative $27,159 to $4,346. The standard deviation of these gaps is $2,621. Thus, most school districts have gaps between negative $2,621 and $2,621 per student. According to this measure of fiscal condition, the healthiest district is District Number 3 in Madison County. This district has an expenditure need of $2,808 and capacity of $29,967, which results in a gap of negative $27,159. The expenditure need of this district is reasonably close to the average need for all school districts, $3,504, but District Number 3 is in excellent fiscal condition because it has such a large revenue-raising capacity. This district can either provide a much higher quality education to its students or impose a lower tax burden upon its residents than the average district in Nebraska. The district that has the greatest disparity between its need and its capacity, and that is, therefore, in the worst fiscal condition, is District Number 540505 in Santee County. This district is not the district with the greatest need per student. The district with the greatest need, McPherson County High School, actually ends up with a gap of negative $569 and ranks 217th in the state, where a rank of 1 is best and a rank of 865 is worst, because its revenue-raising capacity is larger than its expenditure need. In contrast, Santee County has both high need, measured to be $5,161 per student, and low capacity, measured to be $814 per student, and therefore has the largest need capacity gap in the state, namely $4,346 per student. The enrollment group with the largest average gap is the one with 100 to 500 students. This group has an average gap of $976. Districts in this group would have to receive an additional $976 per student from outside sources on average in order to provide their students an average quality education while imposing an average tax burden upon their residents. The enrollment group ranging from 500 to 999 students and the group ranging from 20 to 29 students also have a positive average gap. All other groups have negative average gaps. These districts are able to generate more than enough revenue, with an average tax burden, to cover the expenditure need associated with providing an average quality education. Conclusions. Our analysis reveals two important facts about the fiscal conditions of school districts in Nebraska. First, and most important, school districts vary greatly in their revenue-raising capacities, in their expenditure needs, and in their need-capacity gaps. This variation exists across all classes of districts and all sizes of districts. Differences in income account for a large part of this variation, but other factors, including differences in the ability of districts to export taxes and differences in the costs of providing education due to the presence of handicapped students, economies of scale, and other factors, all contribute to the current fiscal disparities across the state's schools. Second, the largest and the smallest districts are in much better condition, on average, than are the districts with enrollments between 100 and 1,000 students. These medium-sized districts do not have the high per-student income that the smallest districts have, nor can they take full advantage of economies of scale, as can the largest districts. As a consequence, these medium-sized districts have, on average, both a relatively lower capacity to generate revenue and higher expenditure needs. Determinants of school district spending. Our measure of fiscal condition is designed to be unaffected by the actual decisions a school district makes about spending and taxation. Nevertheless, it is important to understand the factors that do influence the actual fiscal behavior of districts. State policymakers may want to understand, for example, what impact state and federal aid has on spending, or whether districts with larger tax bases spend more than other districts. The section addresses these and other questions about the behavior of school districts in Nebraska. The statistical support for our conclusions is presented in Appendix 11A. Following standard practice, our analysis of school district spending per student is built on the notion of voters' demand for public services. Voters' demand for public services, including education, like their demand for private goods and services, increases with their income and decreases with the price of those services. In the case of public services, the price is the amount a voter must pay in taxes for another unit of services. This so-called tax price is inversely related to the property tax base. In the school district, the greater the tax base, the lower the taxes each voter must pay to raise a given amount of revenue. We find that both income and tax price have a statistically significant impact on school district spending. Our measure of income, as mentioned previously, is the aggregate household income of a district divided by the number of students in that district. We observe that as income rises, expenditure on education also rises. When income is small, say, $10,000 per student, $1,000 rise in income per student, a 10% gain, will create a $23 increase in spending per student. When income per student in a district is much higher, say $50,000 per student, income must rise by $5,000, also a 10% gain, in order to obtain the same $23 increase in education spending per student. The tax price, which is the inverse of property value per student, reflects the cost to property owners of an increase in spending. We FMD that a district with a tax price one standard deviation above the average spends about $244 less per student than a district with an average tax price. Another way to express this result is to say that for every 10% increase in tax price, a district will spend about $40 less per student. We also found that districts with a larger ratio of total district residents to students tend to spend more per student, presumably because they can spread the cost of educating each student over more adults. To be precise, spending per student increases approximately $24 for every 100% increase in this ratio. For example, if two districts both have 10 students, but one district has a total population of 30, whereas the other has a total population of 60, the second district will spend $24 more per student than the first district, all else equal. As we discussed earlier, certain social and economic characteristics that affect the cost of providing education also vary among districts. We estimate the impact of these characteristics on the cost of education by determining their impact on school district spending in Nebraska, controlling for other factors. We find that several economic and social factors significantly influence the cost of providing education. These factors are the number of special education students, the number of students eligible for transportation, the overall size of the student population, the proportion of students in secondary school, and the class of district. As explained earlier, these results were used to calculate each district's expenditure need. We also looked at the impact of enrollment in private schools on spending for public education. We found that for every 1% increase in the number of children attending private schools in a county, all the school districts in that county spend $17 less per student for public education. This result has two possible explanations. The first is that voters in some districts may simply have a preference for sending their children to private schools and may therefore not support spending for public education. The other side of the coin is that the public schools in some districts may be providing a poor quality education, so parents decide to enroll their students in private schools. In either case, our results imply that the children remaining in public school districts suffer the consequences when private school enrollment rises. Aid from the state and from the federal government tends to stimulate spending by school districts. For every dollar of direct aid given by the state, not federal pass-through aid, school district spending increases by $1.26. For every dollar of federal aid, school district spending increases by $1.06. The response to aid varies from school district to school district, but these results imply that, on average, school districts are inclined not to reduce the tax burden when aid is received, but instead spend the aid on education, and even to match a small portion of the aid with additional spending generated from their own revenue. In contrast, when aid is received from other local governments, the school district spends 89 cents of every dollar in local aid received and passes the remaining 11 cents on as tax savings. Our analysis also finds no systematic variation in spending between districts that participate in an educational service unit, ESU, and districts that do not. ESUs collect fees from participating districts, but also receive separately collected property taxes and federal and state aid. The revenue that ESUs collect in addition to the school payments averages $50 for every student enrolled in districts that participate in ESUs. One might have expected that the districts that participate in the ESU system would spend, all else equal, $50 less per student than the schools providing ESU-type services on their own. The evidence does not support this expectation. The services provided by ESUs do not appear to be substitutes for services previously provided by school district themselves. Our results also do not allow us to make a judgment on whether or not inter-school district payments for tuition and transportation are adequate to cover true costs imposed by non-resident students on the servicing district. Policy options for the state. In this section, we describe the existing state aid programs in Nebraska and present evidence that these aid programs do not help to offset disparities in fiscal condition among school districts. We also provide the results of two experiments in consolidation that reveal the significant potential of consolidation to lessen fiscal disparities across school districts and to lower the cost of education in Nebraska. State aid to schools. The three main components of state aid in Nebraska are foundation aid, incentive aid, and equalization aid. In school year 1985 to 1986, state aid payments for these components totaled $131,041,778. The breakdown was as follows: foundation aid, $94,546,576, incentive aid, $3,566,546, and equalization aid, $32,928,656. The first step in Nebraska's education aid process is for the legislature to make a total appropriation for aid to public schools. The legislature then decides how much of this total appropriation will go to foundation aid. Foundation aid is a flat grant per pupil using an indexing system. The indexing system is intended to reflect the average costs of educating students in different grade levels. The index is weighted as follows: kindergarten, 0.5, grades 1 through 6, 1.0, grades 7 and 8, 1.2, and grades 9 through 12, 1.4. Total state enrollment for each grade group is multiplied by the appropriate index to arrive at the weighted enrollment needs of the state. Foundation aid is divided by the state's total needs to arrive at a dollar payment for every need index of 1. This usage of the term need is similar, but not identical to our usage in this chapter. Finally, aid is allotted to each district based upon the result of the index multiplied by each district's enrollment for each grade group. For example, if foundation aid payments were to be $50 for every need index of 1 and a district had a total need index of 12.5, that district would receive $625 in foundation aid. This program is not a true foundation aid program. In other states, foundation aid is designed to ensure that every district can provide some minimally acceptable level of education at a reasonable property tax rate. As a result, this aid, unlike the foundation aid in Nebraska, is higher for districts with relatively small property tax bases. Incentive aid is given in proportion to the levels of education achieved by teachers within each district, and for offering summer school programs. Aid in 1985 to 1986 was given as follows: $150 for a bachelor degree, $250 for a master degree, and $350 for a doctoral degree. Equalization aid is computed in several steps. First, the foundation and incentive aid totals are subtracted from the total state aid appropriation to arrive at the amount available for equalization aid. Next, the basic need of each district is calculated using the enrollment weighted index, as in foundation aid calculations, and additional factors. These factors, each of which is given a separate weight in the formula, are scarcity of population, an enrollment increase, an enrollment decrease, a program for gifted students, a program for special needs students, and transportation. Total need is arrived at by adding basic needs and the additional factors. This need is compared to the estimated capacity of school districts. This usage of the term capacity is similar, but not identical to our own usage in this chapter. The capacity is the total amount of revenue that could be raised with a base levy, 42 cents per $100 valuation for K-12 districts, 28 cents for all other districts. Added to total revenues from foundation aid, tuition payments received over 125% of per-pupil costs, license fees, and transportation receipts. Finally, need is subtracted from capacity to arrive at the net needs of the district. The equalization aid is then proportioned, based on individual net need, among the qualifying districts. In school year 1985 to 1986, only 192 school districts qualified for equalization aid. To evaluate current aid programs, we determine whether school districts in poorer fiscal condition, as measured by their need capacity gap per pupil, receive more total aid from the state. We find that the opposite is true. The better is a district's fiscal condition, the higher is the state aid it receives. To be specific, if District A's need capacity gap is $1 lower than District B's, then District A can expect to receive $0.016 more state aid than District B, all else equal. The details of this analysis are presented in Appendix 11A. To some degree, this result reflects the fact that the bulk of state aid dollars are not allotted to equalization aid, but are instead granted through the foundation and incentive aid programs. Foundation aid accounts for one aspect of a district's fiscal condition, the share of its students in secondary school, but does nothing else to direct funds to the districts in the poorest fiscal condition. Because it is based on teachers' educational levels, incentive aid is directed primarily toward districts in good fiscal health, which can afford to hire the most educated teachers. In fact, relatively large and rich districts receive far more aid per pupil through this program than do districts in poor fiscal condition, such as medium-sized districts. By focusing on the difference between needs and capacity, the equalization aid program helps direct aid to the districts in poor fiscal condition, but it is considerably smaller than the other programs. Moreover, its formula contains several factors, such as the sparsity of population, that do not appear to be related to a district's fiscal condition, and excludes several factors, such as economies of scale, that have an important bearing on a district's fiscal condition. Overall, therefore, the current state aid programs do a poor job of identifying and compensating school districts that are, through no fault of their own, in poor fiscal condition. We recommend that state policymakers reassess their current programs of aid to education. 1. Key policy objective, lessening fiscal disparities among school districts, is not well served by the current programs. Indeed, these programs actually magnify fiscal disparities to a small degree. As a result, we recommend a redesign of state aid programs to direct more aid to districts in the greatest need. The principal problem with the current system appears to be that too much emphasis is placed on so-called incentive aid, the primary impact of which is to reward the districts with the most resources to spend. Indeed, the main effect of this program is to reward high-spending districts for the hiring decisions they would have made anyway. It provides a very weak incentive for districts to switch to teachers with more advanced degrees. In addition, the Foundation Aid program does little to bring the poorest districts up to some minimal educational standard, which is widely regarded as the principal justification for such a program. We recommend a substantial shift away from incentive aid and foundation aid toward a redesigned equalization program. Moreover, to the extent that foundation aid is retained, we recommend that its formula be changed to account for a district's tax base, which is the approach used in other states. Looking ahead to the next section, we must also point out that changes in state aid need to be coordinated with state policy concerning school district consolidation. As explained in other chapters, property taxes in Nebraska are higher than in almost all other states, and we recommend that they be lowered primarily through increased state aid to local governments. Because most property taxes in Nebraska support local education, state aid to education can play a key role in reducing local property taxes. Furthermore, as shown earlier, state aid to education in Nebraska is far below the national average. We also recommend, therefore, that the state of Nebraska should not only redesign its aid for education, but also should significantly expand the budget for these programs. Some people in Nebraska have suggested that a better way to lower the school property tax burden is to allow school districts to levy an earnings tax. The problem with this approach is that it does not bring any new resources into school districts that are in relatively poor fiscal condition. Remember that fiscal condition depends only on resident income and the district's ability to export taxes to non-residents. Regardless of whether school revenue is raised through a property tax or an earnings tax, it ultimately must be paid out of residents' income, or else it must be exported. Most school districts in the state have a low potential for exporting an earnings tax to non-resident commuters, just as they have a low export ratio through the property tax. So an earnings tax for school districts would do nothing to help the districts that need help the most. Fiscal aspects of school district consolidation. Perhaps the most unusual feature of public education in Nebraska is the large number of school districts, many of which have fewer than 20 students. This feature has been widely debated, and many plans for consolidating school districts have been proposed. In this section, we examine two key fiscal aspects of consolidation, namely the impact of consolidation on the fiscal condition of school districts, and the impact of consolidation on the overall cost of educating students in the state. We do not attempt a complete analysis of consolidation. We focus on fiscal issues and do not consider non-fiscal issues, such as the relative merits of various educational environments or the importance of local control over schools, that are also important to any decision about consolidation. We also do not propose a particular consolidation plan, but instead analyze two consolidation experiments to determine the potential gains and losses from consolidation. In other words, we make no attempt to resolve the consolidation debate, but instead try to contribute to this debate some important information on fiscal issues. As explained earlier, a school district's fiscal condition can be summarized by its need capacity gap, which is the amount of money per student it would have to receive from outside sources to be able to provide an average quality education at an average tax burden on its residents. This gap, which is standardized to be zero in the average district, varies widely across districts in Nebraska, with a maximum of $4,346 and a minimum of negative $27,159. Although the gap equals zero in the average district, it is below zero, at negative $1,017, in the district that contains the average student in the state because the large districts, which contain most of the students, are in relatively good fiscal condition. These results are restated in the first column of Table 11-12. Our principal objective in this section is to determine what happens to these results in two consolidation experiments. Our first experiment is to consolidate all the school districts in a county, except in Douglas and Lancaster counties, where we consolidate only those districts outside Omaha and Lincoln. Thus, this experiment replaces the 865 school districts in our data set with 93 hypothetical county school districts, plus Omaha and Lincoln. We do not regard county-wide school districts as the best consolidation option in every county, but we believe that this experiment does provide insight into the fiscal impacts of large-scale consolidation. We conduct two versions of this experiment. In version A, we assume that consolidation does not alter the need capacity gap facing the average student in the state, but instead simply pools the existing revenue-raising capacity and existing expenditure need of all the districts in a county. Thus, for example, this version of the experiment does not consider potential scale economies from creating larger districts. The results of version A are presented in the second column of Table 11-12. As shown in row 2, the gap facing the average student is the same as in the current system, but as shown in rows 3 through 5, the variation in fiscal condition across districts is substantially lower. The standard deviation in the gap, a measure of the extent to which the gap varies across districts, is 2.5 times lower than in the current system, $1,068 compared to $2,621, and the range in gaps is from $2,709 to negative $3,911, instead of from negative $27,159 to $4,346. These results are important because they describe dramatic declines in the fiscal disparities that currently exist across school districts in Nebraska. This consolidation experiment shows that without any new state aid or other new resources, a plan that involves a sharing of revenue-raising capacity and expenditure need by many current school districts can greatly lower the unfair fiscal advantage enjoyed by some districts and greatly lessen the fiscal disadvantage experienced by others. Version B of this experiment is to recalculate expenditure need for each new consolidated school district on the basis of its pooled characteristics. In other words, we use our analysis of school costs to calculate the cost of providing an average quality education in a district with the share of handicapped students, share of students eligible for transportation, enrollment scale, and class of the hypothetical consolidated district. The countywide districts are treated as either Class 2 districts or Class 3 districts, depending on their population. This version of the experiment leads to even more dramatic results because it accounts for potential economies of scale to be achieved through consolidation, such as spreading the costs of administration, libraries, and other system-wide functions over a larger number of students. As explained earlier, however, gains to economies of scale must be balanced against cost differences among classes of school districts. In particular, this consolidation experiment eliminates Class 1 districts, and therefore eliminates their special cost advantages. Also, as explained earlier, we assume that inter-district spending differences that are left over after controlling for all observable factors are cost differences, not differences in service quality. If this assumption is incorrect, then our calculations understate the gains from consolidation. Because these leftover spending differences are large, almost $2,500 per pupil between Class 1 and Class 3 districts, the degree of understatement could be substantial. The results of version B are presented in the third column of Table 11-12. In this case, a decline in costs made possible by consolidation, largely due to economies of scale, lowers the need capacity gap in the district serving the average student to $1,864, a drop of $555 per student. because our calculations hold educational service quality constant, this drop corresponds to an average cost savings of $555 for educating every student in this state. Thus, this consolidation experiment can be said to cut the cost of educating students in Nebraska by $555 multiplied by 266,000 students, or over $147 million. This result should not be interpreted as an estimate of the cost savings from an actual consolidation plan. Instead, it dramatizes the potential cost savings from consolidation, even with conservative assumptions. Furthermore, note that version B of this experiment, like version A, greatly lowers the fiscal disparities across school districts. The standard deviation in the need capacity gap, for example, is only $1,107, compared to $2,621 in the current system. Our second experiment is to consolidate each Class 6 district with all its affiliated Class 1 districts. This experiment involves only 186 of 865 current school districts for which we have complete data, and is designed to illustrate the possible outcomes of a modest consolidation plan. The current fiscal conditions of the 186 districts in this experiment are described in the first column of Table 11-13. As shown in the second row of this table, the average student in this set of districts faces a need capacity gap of -$419, which indicates that the fiscal condition of these districts is slightly better than that of the average district in the state as a whole. As before, we conduct two versions of this experiment. In version A, we assume that consolidation does not alter the need capacity gap facing the average student in this set of districts, but instead simply pools the existing revenue-raising capacity and existing expenditure need of each Class 6 district and all its affiliated Class 1 districts. The results of version A are shown in the second column of Table 11-13. By design, the need capacity gap facing the average student is the same in version A and in the current districts, but this consolidation experiment greatly reduces the variation in fiscal condition across districts. As shown in the third row of Table 11-13, this experiment cuts the standard deviation of the need capacity gap from $2,785 to $579, and also sharply reduces the range and gaps across districts. This experiment, like the first, shows how consolidation can reduce the huge fiscal disparities that currently exist across school districts in Nebraska. Consolidating Class 6 districts with their affiliated Class 1 districts would go a long way toward equalizing the fiscal condition of all participating districts, with no increase in state resources. Similar gains could undoubtedly be achieved by consolidating unaffiliated Class 1 districts with Class 2, Class 3, or Class 6 districts. Also, as before, version B of this experiment is to recalculate expenditure need for each new consolidated school district on the basis of its pooled characteristics, such as its share of handicapped students and its enrollment scale. In calculating its costs, we treat each new consolidated district as either a Class 2 or a Class 3 district, depending on its population. Because we assume that the leftover spending differences between districts, as described earlier, represent cost differences, the elimination of Class 1 districts in this experiment leads to cost increases that offset the economies of scale achieved through consolidation. We emphasize again that this assumption is conservative, so this version of the experiment may greatly understate the cost savings that can be achieved through consolidation. The results of version B are presented in the third column of Table 11-13. As in the case of version A, this experiment greatly lowers the variation in the need capacity gap across school districts. Compared to the current system, the standard deviation of the gap drops from $2,785 to $632. In addition, the maximum gap is cut in half, and the minimum gap is only -$877 instead of -$18,079. Given our conservative assumptions, however, this version of the experiment does not lower the total cost of providing education in the participating districts. In fact, the gap facing the average student rises slightly because the economies of scale achieved by the new consolidated districts are not sufficient to offset the loss of the cost advantage of Class 1 districts. This result should not be interpreted to mean that consolidation would raise the cost of providing education, but it does indicate that with modest consolidation plans, the cost savings may also be fairly modest. Even with modest consolidation plans, however, significant cost savings could arise if the observed leftover spending differences between Class 1 and other districts actually represent differences in service quality instead of cost differences. Conclusions: in our judgment, major changes in state educational policy are needed. The current system is far too complex, leads to far too much inequity across districts, and relies far too heavily on the property tax. To solve these problems, we recommend 3 steps. First, the state should design and implement a major school district consolidation. Not only could such a plan dramatically reduce fiscal disparities across school districts at no cost to the state government, but it also has the potential to save local taxpayers a significant amount of money by creating school districts that can take advantage of economies of scale. Second, the state should shift the emphasis in its educational aid programs away from incentive aid and foundation toward equalization aid, and it should redesign the equalization aid program so that it is more directed to districts in poor fiscal condition. To make it a true foundation aid program, that is, a program that helps all school districts provide at least the lowest acceptable quality of education, the foundation aid formula also should give more aid to districts with lower tax bases. Current aid programs actually exacerbate fiscal disparities across districts and need to be reformed. Because consolidation will greatly reduce fiscal disparities across districts, the second step should be taken after a consolidation plan is implemented, that is, state aid should be directed toward districts in the poorest fiscal health after consolidation. Third, the state should increase the budget for educational aid. This step will help reduce reliance on the property tax in Nebraska and will bring Nebraska closer into line with the level of state aid to education in the rest of the nation.